Yeah, why don't we go ahead and get started just because, you know, we gotta call this thing to order, and hopefully some people will join us in the near future. But if you could just state your name and the organization that you are representing, that would be great.
I'm Bill Carpenter with the Department of State Health Services.
And Donnie Green with the North Central Texas Council of Governments, representing Promoting Independence Advisory.
And I'm Ashley Schweikart, the coordinator of the Housing and Health Services Coordination Council, and I work for the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs. Thanks, you guys, for being on the call. I know that there's a lot of stuff on the agenda, but really, all the stuff about draft chapters, it was just to give you a chance to get in your hands those chapters and let me know if you have any already edits to those chapters. That way we can make those changes. Are there any edits that we want to talk about on the phone today?
Well, in the first 28 pages, I thought it looked really good. I didn't have any edits other than just a couple of kind of stylistic things or typos.
Okay.
It looks really good.
Thank you. And yeah, any changes that you want to send me, you can send them in track changes, or you can put them in an email, like for those maybe smaller things.
And Ashley, for the Chapter 5 document, when we talk about the Section 811 funding, are we going to identify any of the changes when they come in?
So you mean Chapter 6, Draft Chapter 6 of the plan?
Chapter 6, yeah.
Yeah, so basically I have been hesitant to begin crafting that one.
Okay.
For the fact that we don't have a NOFA yet.
Okay.
I feel like even though the draft of the entire plan will have to be done before we submit an application for 811 funding, I think that it would really help to at least have the NOFA to know the parameters in which we are going to be held to when we start this whole process, given that, you know, the feedback that I've heard from the council is that this application for 811 funding is in a way kind of our guinea pig trial run of service-enriched housing that we're getting to see from the very beginning all the way through. So because that's something important that we want to capture, I'm hoping that I can delay a little bit on drafting that chapter so that way I can have the information that HUD is going to be providing to us on the parameters of the Section 811 program.
Okay.
But you know, it's a valid point that we're definitely not going to be anywhere near seeing an application by the time this needs to be drafted. And I think also what I'll do is I'll try to give the back history of the CMS grant as kind of a lead-in, so that we will have the background of, you know, given that this is a priority not only of the council but of the state of Texas. There was this joint application for CMS funds. Give that back history and go into the 811 application in that chapter. All righty. Well, so now you have in your hands those draft chapters 4 and 5. And really, like I said in my email, those are not very different from the reports that you have seen at quarterly council meetings, as draft chapter 4 is the online discussion forum that I reported on at our December meeting, and Chapter 5, which is the case studies, is the report that I presented at our September meeting. So this isn't necessarily new material, but it was material that I thought was really relevant to show the efforts that were undertaken kind of during in this interim period between plans. So just so you know, it's not going to be a whole lot of new stuff, but if you do feel like there's any changes to make, please do email me.
Okay.
So then I think that what we'll move to, which is you know, I think the most important thing that we need to do for this committee in this meeting and the next meeting is kind of have our thinking caps on and say, we have this list of service policy recommendations that we've come up with so far over the last 2 months. What do we want to add to this existing list? So I gave you the document that says service committee draft recommendations, and that's what we've discussed so far. And then I have a second document called additional ideas for service committee recommendations. And what that is, you know, I bullet pointed a couple things off the top of my head that I thought maybe the council would want to move forward with a recommendation on. But then I also provided the recommendations from the 2010-2011 plan. Mm-hmm. I think what's really important to think about is that, you know, we've had less than 2 years since we submitted our first plan. And obviously that's not enough time to you know, make headway on every single one of these and feel like every single one of our recommendations from the last plan has been completed. Some of them have had a lot of movement on them, others haven't. So I think that there's an opportunity that we could, again, make a recommendation that we made in the first plan, or we could expand upon maybe a recommendation that has made some headway, but we think that there are some secondary steps to that recommendation. So this is just me opening up the floor for, here's what we currently have, now what else do we want to put into this chapter?
One of the things that I'm not seeing, and I believe it was a goal for the first year, but I'd really like to see some robust cross-training between housing and social service folks.
Okay.
Whether it's, you know, having TDHCA staff go on the road and do forums on housing programs, whether it's having the ABRCs do housing workshops, whether it's, you know, providing information to the area agencies on aging about housing programs. I think that's one of the least expensive and hopefully more effective ways of bridging gaps between those two worlds. And I was thinking that was kind of a fundamental charge of the service committee.
Okay. Yeah, and I apologize, Donnie. These recommendations were the ones that were the policy and funding recommendations that were service specific. So I didn't pull into this document the cross-agency recommendations that were in the previous chapter.
Okay.
So what I can do is I can certainly pull those for the next meeting, because obviously we did have those cross training, education, outreach type recommendations in the plan. It just wasn't in under the service section of the plan.
Okay. So these recommendations have been pulled from the policy subcommittee.
So the policy and barriers subcommittee, you know, they made recommendations, both policy and funding recommendations, for both the housing and the services side. So since this time around we split ourselves up into housing issues and service issues, I wanted to bring the previous service recommendations to the service issues committee. What, you know, which ones of these are ones that we should say, yes, again, we want to again say that this recommendation it should be a priority. And not to say that we're going to be ignoring the cross-agency recommendations. I was just thinking of those as maybe a future committee meeting.
Okay.
And actually, sending from our last meeting, I was able to send all of the Recovery Oriented Systems of Care chairpersons information about the ADRCs in their area. Got three responses that said they appreciated it, that they're looking into it, and they look forward to having a relationship with them. So,
great.
And just let you know that was accomplished.
That's great. Yeah, I think that would be great to have that connection there. And you know, I think what we really got out of the meeting, the last conference call meeting, was that, you know, these recovery-oriented systems of care are truly a supposed to be a cross-agency partnership at the local level, and the individual are SEs. And so, you know, hopefully what we can recommend is that we have our housing partners and housing networks make sure that their membership is aware of the ROSCs in their area.
Yeah.
Great. So anything on the additional ideas page that jumps out at you as like, this didn't get done by the 82nd session, or this, there hasn't been much movement by a state agency on this one, we need to recommend it again?
Looking at the behavioral health pilot, the expansion of that, can you explain that a little bit to me? I'm not real familiar with that, what the pilot was.
Sorry, which one are we looking at?
Bullet point number 2, expansion of behavioral health pilot to more areas of
the... That was the looking at the Money Follows the Person. They have Bexar County is where they started the behavioral health pilot of using Star Plus money.
Okay.
And I think that they're now looking at a second location in Austin, working with Ash.
Still it's using cognitive adaptive therapy, and I think I've got some information from Mark on that I can forward to you.
That sounds great. I've heard of cognitive adaptive therapy, so yeah. That's mainly for the population for persons of schizophrenia?
I'm not sure if it's that diagnosis specific.
Okay.
In terms of consumer population, it is under MFP, so it's for folks who are in nursing facilities and wish to return to the committee. And I think they've had success or used the program with maybe all of the Access One diagnoses. I'm not sure, but Mark would definitely be able to answer that.
Okay, thank you.
And also, just to build off of what Donnie said, is the behavioral health pilot, one important thing was that it wasn't just nursing facilities, but I think it was also state hospitals.
You're right. Yeah, I just, I know only what I've heard about the program, and it sounds like it's been very effective and very cost effective as well. I know through our work as a relocation contractor, that's where most of our unsuccessful transitions go wrong, where we're able to provide various supports, but if it's somebody who landed in a nursing facility because of those behavioral health issues and they've been stabilized and are returned to the community without those supports in place, probably 75% of our unsuccessful relocations have been due to psychotic breaks or some kind of breakdown in those behavioral health supports.
Okay.
That's I think really important anecdote to think about in terms of how we craft a recommendation maybe about this pilot, and maybe I can ask from Mark some more details of the pilot, because it sounds like, you know, what you're saying, Donnie, is that from your perspective as a relocation contractor, that if the behavioral health pilot was, say, in your area in North Texas, that you could see the benefits in terms of having a stable relocation because of the community-based treatment that those people could get.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, my numbers are wild estimates, so there's probably a huge margin of error there. But it's difficult at times. Under the relocation contract, we're asked to target folks with mental illness. And so a disproportionate number of our relocation consumers have MI, but without any real services to provide them, it's difficult to really do the consumers justice. We target those who have substance abuse, but without any meaningful access to therapy, all we can say is, you know, well, good luck with that.
Right.
And I wish we could be doing much more other than just recognizing it as a risk factor to be able to recognize it and to provide meaningful support.
Sure. Okay. So it sounds like, you know, we are gravitating towards making a recommendation about the expansion of that pilot to other areas, and it sounds like perhaps, you know, the best areas that the pilot could expand to are ones that that are, you know, have a lot of activity in the money follows the person relocation. Like, so I mean I would assume that there are certain areas of the state that a lot of people want to transition to. So maybe that can be a way of prioritizing expansion.
Mm-hmm. That sounds right to me.
Okay. Anything else on that sheet that strikes you?
I'm just looking at the increased funding for the last plan for the assertive community treatment. There hasn't been any increased funding. The service is still available, but there hasn't been any increased funding for it.
Okay. And I'm assuming that the need would justify that continuing recommendation?
Oh, the need's definitely there. Definitely there. I mean, to meet that criteria, to be recommended for the assertive community treatment team, that means you've been in the hospital, a psychiatric facility twice in the last 6 months or four times in the last 2 years, or had extended stays, and they break that down, 30 days or 60 days, and they have time parameters. But essentially it means that staying in the community is difficult for sure. And of course, running an ACT team or to fidelity, meaning following the model of what assertive community treatment really is, especially to get one started, it is expensive. So it would require some funding.
And can I ask? Because that brings up a question that I had. When you say it's expensive to get an ACT team started, does that mean that the ACT teams aren't necessarily provided within each LMHA?
They're available, meaning that they're within the RDM packages. Some of them, because some of the LMHAs, because they're so small or so rural or sometimes designated as frontier, they just can't afford to provide them, because you have to have, you know, designated staff doing designated, you know, tasks. For example, supported housing, supported employment, co-occurring substance use disorder treatment, nurses on the team. Typically, you have a couple paraprofessionals, you have a peer provider, you have a doctor. Now, the doctor doesn't necessarily have to be full-time, but the doctor also, you know, is expensive. And if you only have, let's say, five people who are qualifying for that service, and you're actually delineating that,
yeah,
you know, that number of people to provide the service, then it can become cost prohibitive. At least that's what I'm hearing from the field.
Okay. And, you know, I guess this might be a question that you would have to take back to somebody, but is in these smaller rural or frontier LMHAs, is it that they are telling DSHS, you know, we really wish that we could have this, because we do have people coming in the door that we could serve, or is it that they don't have enough need to justify that?
I'd have to double check it. One of the things that the part of the resiliency in the disease management program is that, you know, you do your assessment, and based on your assessment, a a treatment is recommended, and one of the treatment recommendations is assertive community treatment. The local mental health authority with the utilization manager can override that, meaning you may have recommended ACT, but we're authorizing them, meaning we're saying they're going to receive a different treatment. When they authorize that deviation, they have to provide a reason. I could look into the reason. There's several. Right now, unfortunately, one of the reasons that they can offer is other, which is a catch-all. Now, that unfortunately is overused among all service packages, but I could double-check it for ACT for you.
Well, I mean, only if you think that it's going to be helpful, because I don't want to have you do extra work if, you know, where I was going with my questioning was just to say, you know, when we make the recommendation of increased funding for ACT service packages, does it make sense to ask for them across the board at all LMHAs, or does it only make sense to maybe target funding certain LMHAs? I mean, I guess that's what I'm thinking is that, you know, does it make sense to say every LMHA should have an ACT team, or is it simply not as effective and not as needed for the smaller rural ones to even have one?
Well, we'd always say we want them. However, when you start talking about cost effectiveness,
yeah,
it becomes a kind of a different discussion.
Yeah. Well,
but that's something that we probably would do internally here at the Department of State Health Services, as far as either, you know, appropriation requests or exceptional items, et cetera.
Well, here's a question for you, Bill. What was so great about the information that I was able to gain from DSHS staff on the outpatient competency restoration pilot, mm-hmm, was that they did have that cost comparison to say, this is how much it costs if we are doing the competency restoration in a state hospital,
right,
versus this is how much it costs if we use the OCR pilot. And I think that's, you know, what so many of us have said over the years is, if we can show that cost savings to the state of Texas, that's such a powerful argument.
I don't know of any studies they've done in Texas. I know they've done them in other states, but I could see if I could try to find one in Texas, or see if anybody's remembers any type of cost savings that ACT was able to provide. I know they did it in Oklahoma, and I believe in a couple of Northeast states, but...
Well, if you can't find something in Texas, I would love to see the stuff, though, that is up from other states, because obviously that's at least showing that there is cost savings that exist for this exact program in other places it's been shown. So.
Yeah, I'll definitely look into it for you.
Okay, great. All right, so that one is on the board. Anything else strike you guys?
Well, we are expanding the peer specialist program.
Wonderful.
The Department of State Health Services has a contract with Via Hope here in Austin, Texas, where peers can actually come in and get certified. It's a 40-hour course.
Actually, yeah, now that I think
that provides services in the LMHAs.
Yeah, and you did provide that information for Chapter 1 of the plan. So we do capture that in Chapter 1. And so that is one where we've made some progress as a state, thankfully, and can say that you know, that one is moving forward. And so are there ones, though, that we just really are like, wow, this is such a monumental thing, we haven't seen a whole lot of movement?
Well, I think in terms of increasing the funding for all waiver programs, I mean, that's critical, that the likelihood of additional slots being designated or additional funding, not real promising. Same thing on wages for direct service and support workers. I mean, that really is a foundational issue, but given reduced funding for most of the waiver programs, the likelihood of seeing any movement on that issue, pretty unlikely, although I certainly wouldn't want to strike that. Again, I think that's just a foundational issue.
Yeah.
I think for number nine, one of the things that I'm kind of in the nation stage, I'm just beginning to do some research and talking with some of the social workers or directors of social workers at the state hospitals, is trying to determine how many of those persons are entering the state hospitals that, number one, are not involved with community-based mental health services, and two, who are also homeless, because once they're discharged, rarely are they making their follow-up appointments, from what I understand. I'm trying to see if I can't at least get some of the providers. Well, first of all, I wanted to assess the extent of that, and then secondly, if it is happening, see if some of the PATH providers can somehow intervene before they're discharged from the hospital, so kind of that whole discharge planning doesn't begin the minute you leave.
Uh-huh.
And provide the array of services that are available through PATH.
And that's a great question, Bill. I just wanted to clarify. So currently, the way that PATH works is that it isn't used prior to discharge.
Well, that's the research I'm going to get into. I have just recently started thinking about PATH in those terms. PATH, one of the targeted services for PATH, of course, is outreach.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that can be done in many, 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 many ways. I'm not sure to what extent it's being done for persons who are, say, in a state facility right now. I'm not even sure about the numbers of persons that would actually fit that criteria, but I'm certainly going to talk to some of the directors of social workers to see where we are.
Uh-huh.
With one, obtaining the information for persons who aren't in services and who are homeless, and then see what capacity the PATH programs have to actually, you know, make that connection and make that transition from being in an institution to being discharged to getting services in the community to hopefully, you know, to progress towards, you know, housing.
I think that's a great question, and please do keep me informed on that. So I think that's something that neither committee has yet discussed really PATH and or made a recommendation around PATH. So I think that that's something that we didn't discuss last year in the 2010-2011 biennial.
Yeah, and I think that's a great idea, not only for the social workers that state hospitals, but also for social workers at the state supported living centers. I had the opportunity to meet with the social work directory at the Denton State Supported Living Center, and it was at his request, and I just felt I was delighted he reached out, but a little embarrassed that I hadn't made that initiative. I think that, you know, those connections need to take place at all levels. And as the social work staff have more and more responsibilities for the transition planning piece, there really needs to be encouragement of, you know, meetings with the State Supported Living Center, the state hospitals, and the Aging and Disability Resource Centers, or the Area Agencies on Aging, or the Independent Living Centers. I think there's still a lot of work that's being done in silos.
Yeah, so you're saying, because it sounds like that could be a potential recommendation about the connecting of those who do discharge planning or planning at institutions such
right.
as SLCs, the hospitals and nursing facilities to, I mean, I guess I don't know how to firm up or give some teeth to that recommendation, but something about connecting to their local ADRC or,
right.
you know, whatever it may be.
And I know that DADS is creating 20 or creating a number of new positions within the state-supported living centers for people who will relocate residents to the community. And so maybe as part of their job description or as part of their initial training, that there, again, be robust interagency training so that, you know, all of the key players are familiar with each other, the service array, referral procedures, because we have a benefits counseling program that too many times kind of operates in isolation. We have contractual responsibilities to conduct outreach, to help people access these benefits for Medicare beneficiaries with low incomes, for folks without insurance, and it just seems like many times there's a failure for us to connect with some key players who are kind of non-traditional partners.
And so, if you say non-traditional partners, what do you mean?
Well, folks who are working in institutional settings and who are interested in relocating. Historically, there's been no formal relationship between us and the state-supported living centers, even though they're funded by DARS. I'm sorry, by DADS.
I think that that's a fantastic recommendation. I think that we should really, I'll try to firm up some language there, and maybe you can help me, Donnie, with it, because you're right, the CMS admin money that we got around to, is there's a good chunk of it is being used for those FTEs that are going to be discharge planners and SSLCs. So I agree with you that they should be used, as well as we should, you know, we could maybe make two recommendations, one that's around them and one that's around the benefits counseling role and the community. Or we can put them all together, however we want to do
it. Yeah. Because I think those transition coordinators will be focusing largely and perhaps exclusively on the Medicaid waiver programs. And I think that they can meet most of the consumer's needs. But, you know, my vision is that by working in collaboration, the consumers will be connected not just with the waiver program, not just with federal or state services, but also with the local services. For example, if there's a volunteer program in which the consumer can participate as a consumer or as a volunteer, that we're making that connection.
Okay.
The other thing, and it's, you know, it doesn't have a fiscal note, it's very simple, but from our last conversation about establishing partnerships between agencies. I know that some housing communities have service coordinators, but those are communities for older residents, and the funds are awarded on a lottery basis. They're not sufficient. It would be really nice to provide some kind of toolkit or technical assistance or fact sheet to developers as they're looking at creating housing communities, and as they think about meeting the long-term service and support needs of their residents in the absence of a staff person, it would be nice to give developers a heads up. Here are some agencies or some individuals who might be able to help integrate that long-term service and support piece into your community. You know, contact your area agency on aging. Here are some of the things that they can do. Have a conversation with your DADS worker, with your MHA. And I'm not sure if there's any kind of consistent information sharing to housing folks as they're looking at establishing communities or even you know, maintaining existing communities.
Right. And, you know, I think that you make a good point, and I think that we, you know, we did try to touch upon that need in the last plan. I'm trying to, like, I'm flipping through my plan currently as we speak to find where I'm thinking I remember it. Well, so I do remember that we talked about some type of landlord orientation presentation. And that's, I think, you know, kind of got to part of what you're saying, which is that you know, we, if there was a way to provide some type of standardized materials to explain that for those tenants with those unique needs, like long-term service and support needs, here's the URL.
And for the housing authorities as well, through the housing navigation grant that we've gotten, I had the opportunity to do a presentation to the North Texas Housing Authority Association. And I think there were two people in the room out of, you know, 35 who had ever heard of area agencies on aging. I think a few of them had heard of DAD's programs but didn't know what the eligibility criteria were. No one had heard of aging and disability resource centers. So it just seems like there are some lost opportunities that we can address fairly inexpensively and easily, again, just through that training and coordination piece.
Yeah.
And it would be the service providers reaching out to the developers. Yeah.
And also the folks who manage the housing programs, not necessarily the developers, but the housing authorities. I think they're, you know, they're critical players.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that the housing navigators obviously are kind of the, you know, initial ones making headway there right now in the state. And so, you know, I'm wondering if this is simply a reiteration of the fact that we really wanted housing navigators last time around. We got them, and do we want to say we need more, or do we want to say here's what we want them to be tasked with, or I guess how do we want to, because we do have the Establish a Housing Navigator program to assist persons with disabilities and persons who are elderly with available affordable housing. That was actually the housing recommendations, and that's why. But we had that in the last time around, and then we got the funding, we placed the people, and we weren't really specific on their, like, particular job duties. We just said we wanted them.
Right.
So maybe there's something to go with there, or are we thinking beyond housing navigators, some other group of people to be tasked that have this?
Yeah. Well, I think it can be all of that. I think with the housing navigators, you know, they're fairly new to their position, and they're establishing their own goals and priorities. I'm not sure, you know, what kind of program evaluation has taken place, but I think it can be all of those things. I think it can be kind of standardizing their responsibilities so that there is consistent interagency coordination and training taking place. You know, I think the demand for somebody performing the housing navigation function is evident in all parts of Texas, and not just in those, you know, four or five areas that were fortunate enough to get one of those pilot grants.
Right.
So I would just like some kind of encouragement of that interagency collaboration and communication, maybe through the ADRCs, maybe through the AAAs. Let me chew on that.
Well, there's a lot. I think you're right, Donnie. That's a huge growth area, and I speak from experience, which I'm not afraid to admit, you know, I didn't know anything about those things, you know, the ADRCs or the AAAs when I was at the LMHA. And I literally would just kind of, you know, take, you know, work with an individual, try to find housing, you know, try to find services other than what we could provide, and then I would just, you know, discover things out there, which unfortunately is quite common because people just don't know.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, AAA's understanding of what DSHs and the MHAs and the MRAs do is limited, so it's not specific to any one organization or, you know, I think that's a systemic issue.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Anything else that strikes your fancy?
Sounds like we've got our work cut out for us on these.
All right. Well, what I can do is I can draft some language that I will, basically I'll just, I will continue adding to the document that's the Service Committee Draft Recommendations document.
Okay.
So these recommendations will, you know, come, start at, you know, they'll be number 5 because we have 1 through 4 so far. So I'll write those up.
And I'll send you the information I find out on potential cost savings for ACT, persons served in ACT.
Great. That would be awesome. So for our next steps, our next committee meeting, as usual, is in 2 weeks on Wednesday, April 11th. Do we have any initial thoughts on any scheduling conflicts?
Going to that right now, Ashley.
I'm good.
Okay.
Block that out right now, though.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, I'd only gotten messages from Jim and Mark saying that they couldn't be on this call, so I'm not sure what happened to those others, I hope that we can get more people on the next call. Trying to think of anything else on next steps. I think that one of the things that I'm working on right now is trying to get the public forum set up. So obviously that's something that's moving forward, just so that you all know that's moving forward, and that, you know, I'll be crafting some kind of advertising type, you know, materials that we can send out, you know, an email, send something out on the listserv, on the council's webpage regarding those public forums. I'm really hoping that that information will all be up by the end of April, so that way we give people enough time to know in advance, you know, give them about a month to know, hey, this is coming up, but I want to attend. That's moving forward. And as you can see, I'm doing the draft chapters as quickly as I can finish them, or as quickly as they can be finished given other external constraints such as the HUD 811 NOFA, and also the fact that some of the chapters this committee needs to continue to talk about before, you know, a full draft can be made. So that's everything on my end. Anything else from you guys?
Just, do you know when we do the public forums, will they be here in Austin, or will they be across the state? Do we have a potential or an estimated a date or dates when we would be doing this?
Yeah, so in the materials that I provided to you for the March 5th meeting, I don't know if you still have that email of the documents that I sent out for the March 5th meeting, but one of them was a calendar. It was a one-page calendar of the months of May and June. And so that has, in June, the dates of the public forums. So there, that we had talked about Austin as being one location. We have Plano as our
That sounds, when you said Plano, I remember.
Yes, we have Corpus Christi. We have Lubbock. And then, you know, I'm going to do some outreach as to a valley location, because during the meeting that was something that council members gave feedback on as a possible fit location.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you so much. Okay.
Thank you, Ashley. I appreciate your time.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.